Hi, welcome everybody to the Mets News Podcast, where we talk all things Mets and Giants, anything I feel like talking about. Now, we're getting set for the NFL draft. The offseason's in full swing for the NFL, so I had Justin Penick on from Talking Giants. As you know, I had Bobby Skinner on during the season, and that was my favorite interview to do. I had a great time, so now it's Justin's turn. They're both great guys. I listen to their podcast all the time. So, Justin, how are you?
Fellas, I appreciate you having me on. It has been probably one of the most exciting free agencies that's happened for the Giants since 2016. But even in 2016, I almost feel like there wasn't as much hype around the team as there is right now, because there's Joe Judge, because there's Saquon Barkley coming back, because we signed a premier wide receiver. I mean, the wide receivers are always going to be, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, the eyes are brought onto the team, and, you know, big hype. And Kenny Galladay, of course, is getting the comparisons to Plaxico Burress. So this is an exciting time, and it's exciting time to talk some Giants, be a Giants fan. So thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, and I'm excited to have you on. And we also have Cade from Blackjack Sports. He's joining us again. Cade, how are you?
Doing well. It's end of March, almost April. That means the football season's even closer. So I'm happy to be here. Happy to talk some football.
Let's just jump right into it. The Giants have had a very busy offseason. I want to start off with the tight end. This guy, he was supposed to, in my eyes, replace Evan Engram. I think this is the last year of his deal, which I'm a fan of. I'm not really a huge fan of Evan Engram anymore. All the interceptions that got tied to Daniel Jones, the drop ball in Philly. So what's going on with this tight end situation, Justin?
So Kyle Rudolph, tight end from Minnesota, Giants signed him to like a 2-year, $60 million contract. The contract was split up not evenly throughout 2 years, because obviously you want to lower that cap hit for this year because of the salary cap and COVID and the reduced salary cap, whatnot. So it wasn't split between 2 years, but 2 years, $60 million. That's a pretty hefty contract for a position that isn't necessarily a need for the New York Giants. So you did mention Evan Engram. What this signing of Kyle Rudolph kind of signaled subliminally is Evan Engram is maybe traded. Like, especially I would, you know, pay attention to during draft week. But if Kyle Rudolph does not sign, that is a big, now even more bigger of a question mark on the future of the tight end room and the future of Evan Engram. So Kyle Rudolph, towards the latter end of the 2020 season, suffered some sort of foot injury. He signed with the Giants in principle, one of those, like, you know, we're going to make a metaphorical handshake agreement on this, that this contract will eventually be signed. Kyle Rudolph has not signed officially his contract yet. You know, usually when a player officially signs his contract, the team official social media account will put the picture of him in the Giants hat, and he's got the pen and the paper in front of him. That has not happened yet. So apparently Kyle Rudolph failed his physical in some way, shape, or form or fashion, or, you know, something came up with his foot that he possibly needs surgery. So there's a big conversation. There's a big what if conversation happening right now of, will he even be a Giant? Will he miss a part of training camp? I don't know if he'll miss a part of the regular season. I mean, that's a long time for some sort of foot injury. That would be a very severe foot injury, I think, if he missed part of the regular season. But this is big. You know, a guy that's going to be getting surgery on his foot right before he, or right after he just signed a 2-year, $60 million contract. But that's a decent amount of money, especially for Kyle Rudolph, who hasn't really overtly produced the last couple of years. And if the Giants vision him being the tight end two behind Evan Engram, which would be very head scratching, but it could maybe work. If they envision him being a tight end two, that's a lot of money for a tight end two. So I'm very interested to see how the situation plays out, because if Rudolph doesn't sign, then we're talking about the Giants can go after possibly a guard and address some other needs, because tight end isn't necessarily a big need if Evan Engram is on the team.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. And Cade, what was your thoughts on the injury?
I mean, it's one of those situations where it's just kind of weird. Like, how does this not come out before there's agreements on a contract and stuff? It's just one of those weird situations. Kyle Rudolph at this point in his career is not someone I'm looking at as a tight end one anymore. So if the Giants are bringing him in to replace a guy like Engram, I think that's just a terrible move. You look at his numbers last year, he just absolutely dropped off. Maybe it was injury related, but I don't know. It's just not a guy that's in the prime of his career anymore. Evan Engram, I think this is a really interesting year for him because in his first couple of seasons, he was kind of seen as the main guy, maybe the second option in the receiving core. And that's a lot of pressure, especially for a young kid. He's getting a lot of focus from defenses. So I think this year, especially since the Giants brought in someone like Galladay, they still have Sterling Shepard on the outside, Saquon coming back. There's a lot of options on this offense now, which should at least on some level take some pressure off of Evan Engram, which should maybe, I don't know, mentally, maybe that'll help him out. Maybe that'll help him get his hands right. He won't drop as many balls, whatever the case may be. But I think this is a really interesting year for Evan Engram. I think it could be almost a breakout year, so to speak. So I'm really interested to see what he does this season.
Yeah, I don't know where the Giants go, because last year, and Justin, you can jump in here, I kind of turned against Evan Engram little by little. Each game kind of pulled a little bit out of me. How do you feel as a Giants fan who covers the team more than I do?
Well, I'm a big analytics guy. Now, I don't make them. I don't know. I'm not a big math guy, but I love looking at the analytics side of the game. And if you look at EPA, a metric called EPA, which is expected points added, you know, basically it's looking at value. What value does a player bring to a football team? So obviously the highest EPA for football players is going to be the quarterback, because the quarterback always brings the most value. But looking at Evan Engram and looking at him as a pass catcher, there was not a single receiving target. This includes running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers. There was not a single receiving target that hurt his team more by being targeted than Evan Engram in 2020. Largely, it's due to the interceptions, because interceptions, they drop a ton of value. You know, when you turn over the ball, that really hurts your chances of winning a football game. But for how many of them were his fault? You know, how many that he batted up in the air? I say, you know, I always tell the joke on Talking Giants that Evan Engram was playing hot potato and volleyball all in one last year, because he wasn't just dropping the balls. He was volleying them up. He was serving them up perfectly for the defense to just pick off. So we would like a lot Engram a lot more, or we would hate him a lot less if he just dropped the ball and he put it to the ground instead of just putting it up in the air. But I really don't think the Giants, like, you know, where I am with Evan Engram right now, if he's on the team, great. Fifth year option. Maybe there is a little bit of a thing of contract years. A lot of fans like to yell hoot and holler on social media about contract years, about, oh, players are going to try a lot more harder in their contract year versus years 1 through 4. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but let's just say it is. Contract year for Evan Engram. He really wants to perform because he really wants to get the bag. He really wants to get his money, right? If he's on the team, he's a weapon. He's not a great route runner. He's a great athlete. And that's what the Giants need to work on utilizing him as a great athlete, not as a tight end one, not as a guy that they need to force feed, because they force fed him in 2020 and it just worked out terribly. If he's on the team, great. If he's not on the team, I also think that we can very much survive with, especially with Kyle Rudolph at tight end one, or at Caden Smith as tight end one. Daniel Jones doesn't overly rely on his tight ends. Yeah, he doesn't overly rely on his tight ends. You know, he uses his tight ends as checkdowns. Really, that's what he does. He doesn't really use the running backs as checkdowns, because Eli Manning, the way that his eyes worked, is he would go from intermediate part of the field, short part of the field, sideline. Then he would look to the sideline. And Daniel Jones, he looks the deep part, intermediate part, short. He does not, his eyes don't really go to the sideline necessarily for those checkdowns for the running backs. So if Evan Engram's here, you know, we'll deal with it, and we won't make him the premier target, because obviously Galladay will, Saquon will. Because what happened in 2020, we made Evan Engram the premier target because nobody else was there, and it worked out poorly. But if he's not here, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and Cade, your thoughts?
Yeah, that, like you said, that takes me back to my point that I made before, that what was the pressure being, you know, option number one.
Yep.
What is the focus from the defense being option number one? Tight end's a weird position in the NFL, because they can make or break the team, but they're a very boom and bust position. Mm. I mean, you look at some of the best teams in the league, the Chiefs and the Bucks in the Super Bowl last year, both had phenomenal tight ends. But you don't necessarily need a phenomenal tight end to win a Super Bowl in this league. And another issue is they don't grow on trees either. There's only a handful of tight ends who are really just standouts in this league. And, I mean, is Evan Engram one of those? No, probably not. But is he a solid enough tight end as an option down the list a little bit? Yes, I think he is. So, like I said before, you just see what happens next year with a little bit of pressure taken off of him. I would expect that he probably has the same numbers that he has had in his past four seasons. But you just never know.
I honestly want to see the targets go down for Evan Engram. He got over 100 targets last year. And when you really think, like, when we were doing the tight end review, we usually do all the positional review episodes for Talking Giants. And you go back and it's like, this guy got over 100 targets for how unproductive he was. He really did. Pro Bowl tight end.
That's a lot of targets for a tight end alone, too.
It's a lot of targets. You're right. So, Pro Bowl tight end Evan Engram, right? So, if Evan Engram is on the team next year or, in 2021, just don't rely on him as much. You make the targets, make the times that he touches the ball count, because he is a weapon with the ball in his hands. It's just, how can we get the ball in his hands and how can he get it caught?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was he was drafted so high, so there's so much expectations on him. He was a huge name coming out of college. So the Giants, in a sense, tried to force feed him. And when you try to force feed someone, it rarely ever works out to be successful. Right. So I think that was just probably the problem with him as well.
If I remember correctly, and Justin, you can correct me if I'm wrong, he was drafted in 2017 when the Giants were technically still going for it with Eli Manning and that great defense.
Yeah, his first year was with Ben McAdoo, like the 3-13 year. Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, it's like, it's a new management. And this is why I don't think he's coming back no matter what. I don't think Joe Judge likes him, not as a person. I think that's not it. I just think as a player, he just doesn't go good with what Joe Judge represents in a way. And I just think if he has a bad year or interceptions, I think it was on your episode, it was like half of the Giants' interceptions or Daniel Jones was in some way involved Evan Engram.
Yeah.
So I just think he needs a fresh start, whether that's this year or next year. We'll see. But I'm rooting for the guy if he's on my team, because when he does get the ball in his hands, and the Bengals game is a prime example, it goes places. It does. But then on the flip side, he also caused an interception in the red zone in that same game, or some big interception, if I don't remember it to a key. But do you think he's coming back if he has a big year to close this topic out?
Oh, if Evan Engram has a big year in 2021, I mean, of course. I mean, it's very rare that a team drafts a guy in the first round. And at least I'm going to say the Giants. It's very rare that the Giants draft somebody in the first round and they keep him around after the fifth year option and he doesn't come back. Like, even Odell got signed. No, he was traded, but even Odell got the extension. Usually when teams want to invest in their first round picks, they want those guys to be around. So like it will also surprise me, no matter how much I disagree with this, it will surprise me if Saquon Barkley is not a Giant for a couple more years after his fifth year option. We're going to see how Daniel Jones does this year. I think quarterback, I don't want to say quarterback is an exception, but because how valuable and important the quarterback position is, if you feel the need that you kind of need to move on from a guy, you may need to move on from a guy. But even knowing the Giants and how much they like continuity, they sometimes do prefer continuity over sometimes the moves that are necessary. If Evan Engram does have a solid year where it's enough to justify giving him a little bit of an extension, I think the Giants are going to do it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that because, like I said, tight end don't grow on trees. So if you have one that's just having a solid year, nothing special, nothing bad, there's no excuse not to bring them back, because when you look out in the market or the draft, there's likely not going to be any better options out there.
Right.
So, yeah, if he just has a solid year, then I think he'll definitely be back.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way to close this topic out. Now, for the next topic, I'm going to group this into two things. Dave Gettleman and all the free agents he signed, everybody else, but that's Leonard Williams. He got I think, the best wide receiver on the market. Has our opinion changed on Dave Gettleman? Is he now a good general manager in Giants Twitter land, or do some people still hate him? Because I was in the middle with him. I said, give him another year. I love Joe Judge. That, to me, that bought him another year. So has that opinion changed on Dave Gettleman?
Well, you asked the majority of Giants Twitter, and they're going to give you a solid answer depending on where they were even before, right? Now, I will even say a lot of people who were against Dave Gettleman, they have really agreed, and everybody is very much at a consensus right now where we like where the Giants are as a team. Like, the expectation for the Giants pre-free agency was, let's see if we can win the NFC East. Let's see, maybe we can pull some games out, and that's not necessarily the expectation. The expectation is now the Giants should win the NFC East. Like, I'm sure Dallas is also thinking the same thing. Washington's definitely thinking the same thing. Philadelphia is a dumpster fire, but we have three fan bases right now. And I think all of the fan bases' stances of why they think they can win the NFC East are all legitimate, but the Giants have now joined that party where it's like, we should expect to win the NFC East. So that's where where we're at right now. I feel like, as a fan base, Giants Twitter, and ultimately the general manager is part of making those good moves. But I am the type of person, I do like to play the results, because here's what could go wrong. The two biggest free agency moves, well, let's even lump Leonard Williams in to make it three, because he was technically an extension, but he was a part of free agency. Leonard Williams next year, which I don't see this happening, because I've always been a big Leonard Williams believer, and my belief in Leonard Williams has been driven in data. It hasn't been driven in, oh, I'm a fan of Dave Gettleman, and I'm just a fan of every move he makes. No, my belief in Leonard Williams derives from, he consistently gets pressure on the quarterback. So even during his 2019 season, where he had a half a sack with the Giants, I was like, this guy's going to be good because he gets pressure on the quarterback. So let's just say Leonard Williams goes out there and he has four sacks next year. Four sacks and 19 QB hits. That would be bad. That would be a really, really bad look, right? Four sacks, 19 QB hits. Kenny Golladay misses six games with another injury. Adoree Jackson, his knee doesn't hold up. I'm sorry I'm doing this. We're in March, and we just signed these guys, and we're really happy, but I'm doing this. But let's just say all these things happen, because they can. Leonard Williams every year was not a 10-plus sack guy.
He wasn't an elite guy on the defense.
No. I mean, in 2020, he certainly was. I mean, he out of all the Giants edge rushers combined, he had more sacks, almost the same amount of pressures, and I think he had like three more QB hits than there were nine Giants edge rushers that started or that played in football games this year. And Leonard Williams by himself was like almost better than all of those nine guys combined when you combine their stats. So he was good. And I think that he can keep up somewhat similar to that same pace. I really think he can. Pat Graham really unlocked it. And also the secondary being so good unlocked it too, because coverage sacks are a thing in the NFL, and we shouldn't diminish the value of coverage sacks. But neither here nor there. If these moves, which they're big gambles, Leonard Williams was kind of a big gamble, they had to make it because of the trade. Kenny Golladay is kind of a big gamble because of, you know, there are a little bit of questions about the injury history. And Adoree Jackson's probably is the biggest gamble because he's missed how many games in the last 2 years?
Did that shock you, that move?
No, it didn't. It didn't shock me. And it's because of Patrick Graham. And it's because of how Patrick Graham plays defense. A lot of people like to talk about edge rusher, edge rusher, edge rusher. The Giants need an edge rusher. But the way that the Giants played defense in 2020 was, we are not going to allow the explosive play in the pass game. We may allow 4 or 5 yards in the run game every once in a while, but just look at that Seattle game as a pure example of this. We're going to keep everything in front of us. Russell Wilson and quarterbacks, they may like to look deep down the field, but we're not going to allow anything to get behind us, because that's where the Giants fell apart in 2019. They just allowed explosive play after explosive play over and over and over again. That's why that defense was so pitiful. That's why they were they were garbage, because they allowed those deep explosive passing plays. The Giants, they were like fourth or sixth best in the National Football League and not allowing the explosive deep pass play of like 15 plus yards. So it's really, really good. That's a complete turnaround from 2019. So valuing the secondary, Adoree Jackson, when he's right, is a CB1, getting basically two CB1s in here. Darnay Holmes, who is an up-and-coming slot corner, Jabril Peppers, who had, you know, I would argue a pretty good Pro Bowl year. Logan Ryan, who was a vet. Xavier McKinney, who's going to be in his second year. And Xavier McKinney is not even going to be that relied on. That's what gets me excited. This is going to basically be Xavier McKinney's rookie year.
Because he was injured till the Baltimore game, correct?
Yep. He was injured until that Baltimore game with the he had a foot injury himself. So this is basically going to be his rookie year. He had a year of mental reps. He had a year in the building to see how Logan Ryan operates, how Jabril Peppers operates, how James Bradbury operates. Like, there's a lot of good, there's a lot of pretty good veterans that are still relatively young in the secondary. Blake Martinez, Darnay Holmes. He got a chance to see how Darnay Holmes operated as a rookie. And Xavier McKinney is going to kind of be in that spot next year. There's not going to be a lot of expectations. So with how Patrick Graham plays defense, coverage is king. Coverage is going to be the reason why our pass rushers are going to get home. Because when quarterbacks hold the ball for over 3 seconds, now we just need to trust that one of these guys will get home.
Yeah. I could be more. Go ahead, Kate.
Yeah, I see a lot of stuff out there about Dave Gettleman calling him like the king of March and whatnot, the king of free agency and stuff. We saw this isn't the first time the Giants went on a spending spree in free agency. I mean, we saw it back in 2016. And that didn't work out too well for the team. Any GM in this league can throw money around when they have it. Are you actually spending it on quality players? And yes, all these players are quality, but like he said, there's injury concerns with most of them. Galladay, Adoree Jackson. I'm a little concerned about Adoree Jackson because I look at the Titans. The Titans had the worst secondary in football last year. I understand he was hurt, he wasn't there and all that. But they only owed him $10 million, and rather than pay him, they decided to cut him. So it makes me wonder why a team so desperate for secondary help would cut, like he said, a potential QB1. So I have some questions about that. Kenny Golladay is a solid receiver. I wonder if his stats aren't a bit inflated just due to the fact that he played in Detroit. And Detroit was always behind in football game. They're throwing the ball a ton. They're throwing it deep just to get back in game. So I'm a little worried that his stats might have been overinflated, but he's no doubt a solid receiver. It just really seeing if these moves pay off. I mean, you gave these guys a lot of money. I mean, Kenny got 4 years, 72. Adoree, 3 years, 40. Leonard Williams, I have no problem with that contract. I think he's a really solid player. Like you said, it's not just about sacks. It's about are you getting pressure on the quarterback consistently? And it's different when the pressure is coming up the middle for a quarterback. Mm. I mean, when it comes around the edge, you step up. It's coming up the middle, you can't step up. You have to get outside. And if you're doing a good job containing them on the outside, it's over.
Yeah, and most quarterbacks aren't Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson that can just easily escape to the right or their left. Where I think this is a little different compared to 2016 is the Kenny Golladay contract. It's different from 2016 too. Before we even start talking about the contracts, the cap is we're hoping and we're thinking and we're praying the cap is going to explode. All these deals are going to be pretty expensive next year. 2021, these numbers are going to be high, and you know maybe the Giants won't be able to do a big splash during free agency next year, right? But hopefully by the time 2022 and 2023 hit, the deals, the media, the TV deals that the NFL just agreed with Amazon Prime, right? Like Amazon Prime, aren't they? Yeah, aren't they hosting like Thursday Night Football? So all these mega deals and all the deals that are hopefully still yet to come, because I think the NFL, they should do something with Twitch. Remember they were airing like Twitch games for a hot second too? So I think all that stuff is kind of awesome because the internet is taking over. I mean, we have a podcast. This is like the internet, you know, podcasts are internet, Twitter's internet, like the internet. We are hoping the internet takes over. So I think the cap's going to continue to expand, and that will hopefully help the Giants in terms of maybe we'll look at this, even if these contracts don't work 2 years from now, we're going to look back and say it wasn't the worst thing in the world.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree with what you just said. And also we have a lot of players leaving too. I think how many more years does Martinez have? One more year?
Well, this James was breaking. Bradbury. This was breaking the morning that we're recording. Martinez and Bradbury were just restructured. Now, I don't know, because I've been working from home this morning. I don't know if they were extended or they were just restructured. I think they were just restructured. So if they were just restructured, meaning the cap hit was put more into year three versus, because this is year two of Martinez and Bradbury's deal, I'm hoping that they're extended, because if that year three cap hit is going to be very high for Martinez and Bradbury, I would hope they're extended, that they're around for a couple years, because 3 years is not a long time, which is why I don't hate the Adoree Jackson contract, because 3 years, again, not a long time. What they did for Adoree Jackson, they front-loaded it. They front-loaded his contract. He's getting $16 million this year. 16 of it is like his $27 million he's getting this year. So 27 guaranteed, I should say. He's getting it this year. So I would hope that they can maybe restructure and extend Bradbury and Martinez, because 3 years is not a long time.
Yeah, and I liked Martinez and Bradbury, but I like Martinez more, not for production-wise. I just think he's a leader, and he's always out there taking reps. And for the Leonard Williams thing, I just want to touch back on that. He single-handedly, in my opinion, won us that Seattle game. I remember the announcer saying, look how much pressure Leonard Williams is getting on Russell Wilson. And he got that big sack when they were driving down the field on their final drive. So to me, Leonard Williams is a game-changing play, and he came from the Jets. And guys, let's be honest, the Jets are a dumpster fire. They are worse than us, than the Giants, but they are a dumpster fire. I mean, look at them. Hopefully they pick it up. I have nothing against the Jets, but I just think he needed to change the scenery. And I think Patrick Graham had a lot to do with that. But what's your thoughts on Leonard Williams?
First of all, there was something that we basically all that Kyle Rudolph talk of possibly not being on the team. It's irrelevant. Kyle Rudolph has signed his deal with the Giants officially. So guess what?
It's official now.
Ian Rappaport just got on it. So Evan Engram probably getting traded. So if you listen, remember all those thoughts that we had about the first half of the show about Evan Engram. Keep the thoughts that Evan Engram is probably going to be traded now since Kyle Rudolph is here. But I'm going to be interested to see how that, you know, foot surgery, how long is he going to be out? Anyway, Leonard Williams. So I talked about the production of Leonard Williams in 2020 versus like all of the Giants edge rushers combined, which is bananas when you think about it. Like the Giants pass rush this year was Leonard Williams. He was the only consistent part about it. Now, granted, the edge rushers, a lot of them were hurt. So I'm not going to say that the Giants just have zero talent at edge rusher. Lorenzo Carter was really kind of breaking out a little bit before he got hurt, before he tore his Achilles. He was getting over like 90% of the snaps, and the Giants were really, really going with him. O'Shane Zimenez, you know, has a lot of potential as a pass rusher. I don't know if the Giants really view him as a three down player, as a two way player, but definitely has the potential as a pass rusher. Kyler Fackrell, who's probably not going to be back with the team, you know, he was there for 12 games. So Marcus Golden was the most talented edge rusher the Giants had in terms of getting to the quarterback, but they traded him because I guess they didn't just value him a ton. But Leonard Williams, I am always a guy, and I, you know, I said it before, I'll say it again, I'm always a guy that is going to look at, how often are you hitting the quarterback? How often are you pressuring the quarterback? Because let's just say if Leonard Williams comes out this year and he has a 7-sack year, if I had to set an over-under for Leonard Williams' sack total in 2021, it would be 7.5 sacks. So let's just say he hits the under and he goes 7 sacks. 7 sacks in 2021, but he also gets 28 QB hits and maybe some 40 pressures. I'm perfectly fine with that year. I am perfectly fine with that year, because if he's hitting the quarterback at the same rate and he's getting pressure on the quarterback, what that tells me is that it's more likely than not. It is not 100% guaranteed. It is more likely than not that the following year will turn into sacks. You could have a down year with sacks. Look at Shaq Barrett. Shaq Barrett had a bananas year in 2019 with sacks. The sack total was down in 2020, but everybody was still willing to break the bank for Shaq Barrett, because he continued to got pressure on the quarterback. But I feel Leonard Williams amongst Giants fans didn't get that same treatment. In 2019, if you multiplied his advanced numbers, not his sack numbers, if you multiplied his advanced numbers, QB hits and pressures by 2, because he played 8 games with the Giants. So if you, you know, double it, it's 16 games, a 16 game rate. His advanced numbers of QB hits and pressures would have been better than Yannick Ngakoue. Remember how everybody was going Google Gaga over Yannick Ngakoue last offseason? The Giants should trade for him. The Giants should trade for him. He posted pictures of LT. So Leonard Williams had a better 16-game rate than Yannick Ngakoue did. But yeah, everybody, ooh, we love Yannick Ngakoue. So it's just not giving a good player credit just because, and really this is what it is, just because you didn't like the initial trade. Nobody liked the initial trade. But let's recognize good football players when they actually come in front of us. And it's taken Giants fans quite a long time to recognize that Leonard Williams is a very good football player.
Yeah, and Kay, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, like I said before, interior linemen, it's not a glitzy, glamour position. People often don't like to give them the credit they deserve for the work that they do. Leonard Williams had, 12 sacks last season?
11.5, yeah. So you know what? A lot of if you were PFF, you would count that as 12 because they like to round up half sacks to whole sacks.
So yeah, but even so, that's phenomenal for an interior defensive lineman. I mean, just again, like I said, it's different when the pressure for a quarterback, when the pressure is coming up the middle, right in their face, versus when it's coming up the outside. And that's what makes players like Aaron Donald so special. I mean, that's why every year, who's the number one player in football? Most of the players will tell you Aaron Donald is, because it's just different when the pressure is coming right up the middle at you every play. What I'm interested in, do you think, obviously, Davin Tomlinson left, do you think that has any impact on the production that Leonard Williams gets next season? Do you think that hurts him at all?
In terms of getting to the quarterback, no, because my co-host Bobby Skinner, and I can't remember these numbers on the back of my hand, so my apologies, but he actually looked back at the film and he said, he tried to find out who was on the field when Leonard Williams was getting his sacks, because that was a talking point. A talking point was Leonard Williams' production isn't going to be the same when Dalvin Tomlinson is not on the team, because Dalvin Tomlinson and Dexter Lawrence, they were double teamed at such a high rate. And that helped Leonard Williams get one-on-one matchups, which, by the way, if you look back at Leonard Williams' sacks, a good amount of them are him beating double teams, by the way. So that's tough for those people. But actually, most of Leonard Williams' sacks in 2020 came when Dalvin Tomlinson was not on the field. So maybe in the run game. The only thing that I really feel like maybe will suffer a little bit is the run defense overall, because Dalvin Tomlinson, I'm not going to diminish his value. Dalvin Tomlinson is one of the best run defenders in the National Football League. And why the Giants were so good in coverage last year, and this is, this is where having run-stuffing defensive tackles can help you in the pass game. Why the Giants were so good in coverage last year is because they had the hog mollies up front. Dexter, Dalvin, and Leonard. They had those three guys up front. And Patrick Graham said, you need to take care of your business. You need to take care of your gaps. You can't get beat. So then Blake Martinez, Tay Crowder, three safety sets, they can play back. They don't have to play so close to the line of scrimmage. They can play back and they can be ready for the pass. And those three boys, the big boys up front, the edge rushers, they played good gap containment. And then Blake Martinez was able to come up and make the play in the run game. So that's where it could be impacted the most, because and even one of our listeners, Research Rick, NY Giants fan in Charlotte, that's his Twitter handle, but we call him Research Rick. Research Rick compiled the data of Dalvin Tomlinson on the field, like yards per attempt rushing-wise for an opposing offense, and the rushing defense without Dalvin Tomlinson on the field, it's bad. Like, the rush defense is bad yards per attempt-wise compared to when Dalvin Tomlinson's on the field. So that's where Dalvin Tomlinson's going to be missed the most. Not necessarily, my theory, not necessarily in Leonard Williams' pass rushing production.
Right. And I just want to touch on the Kyle Rudolph point. A foot injury, it can go either way. It can be something that lasts a long time. It could be something that to get over quickly. But I just hope it's not a situation like we saw recently with Greg Olsen, where he's constantly going out with some sort of foot injury, re-aggravation, whatnot. So, I mean, that would be my only concern with that, with him signing that contract now.
I feel like there's still so much unknown about this. Mm-hmm. I really do, because It's still Zach Rosenblatt just put out. It's unclear if the original deal was altered at all. So by the time this episode comes out, maybe all the information's out there. Still just very unclear. I don't even know what the foot injury was and you know how long he's going to be out if it requires surgery. So it certainly is interesting to see. The Giants, clearly, this is the takeaway right now. The Giants must not feel like the foot injury can be anything that will alter him for the 2021 season. So
right.
That's the hopefully the solace that I'm taking out of this. They could be wrong. And Cade, you very well could be right, and they could just be taking that chance and that gamble.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Giants, just to go back to this, that point, I guess, I think the Giants are kind of in my boat where they're just like, I don't think it's working out with Evan Engram. He's kind of scarred mentally probably. Because the fan base, I think both of us included, when that Eagles drop first happened, kind of gave him, because I hate Philadelphia. I know you hate Dallas. By the way, Cade's an Eagles fan. But
No, I am not. I'm a Steelers fan. Do not put me in with the Eagles fans.
Oh, then my apologies. I have nothing against Steelers fans. But when that Eagles dropped, I literally could not sleep that night. I was angry. That was probably the most angry I've ever been for at least 6 years, I'd say. At least 5 or 6 years. I was pissed off, and I, on the podcast, kind of gave him hell with Bobby Skinner. We kind of both ripped him a little bit.
but good for you.
But I don't know. But I think the Giants are in my boat where they're just ready to move on. And I'm hoping the guy's successful as long as they don't trade him to somewhere where he can hurt us.
Yeah. The thing with Engram is you're right. He probably could benefit from a change of scenery. And the thing about that Philly game is that was like the most complete game that we played, at least offensively. That was like one of the most complete games that we played offensively up until that point. So that's why it hurts the most there.
Yeah. And let's just segue into the offensive coordinator. I know you don't like him. I'm in the middle. Cade, I don't know where Cade is really. We didn't speak about it. That's how I like to keep my podcast. All I'm going to say is I was okay with bringing him back just so Daniel Jones did not have to learn a new scheme. Go ahead, guys. Take it away.
Cade, why don't you, I want to hear your thoughts before so I can react to it. So why don't you break it down for me?
All right. So obviously going back at the clapper, you know, everyone calls him the clapper from his Cowboys days. To Ben point a little bit there, if you brought in a new offensive coordinator, that'd be Daniel Jones, third offensive coordinator now in, fourth year coming up?
It's third offensive
coordinator year.
In 3 years.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a lot to put a young quarterback through. It's hard for them to be successful. It's hard for the team to even get an evaluation out of them if they're going through that many different offensive schemes. Last year was such a tricky year because obviously the COVID, you didn't have training camp was altered, you know, how do you learn a system in that environment, you know, over Zoom meetings and whatnot. It's tough to really take last year as an honest evaluation period for a lot of coaches around the league, a lot of coordinators around the league. So I think you need to give them another year at least. Just to see what this offense does, especially because Saquon was hurt last year. You have some new pieces this year to work with. So I think this year would be the true test year for Jason Garrett and whether or not he's actually able to lead this offense to some type of success.
All I'm going to say is before Justin takes it over is if he has a good season, he's going to leave. He's going to be gone. So, Justin, take it away.
I'm sorry if you hear a hair dryer in the background. I'm going to talk over it. Oh, look, it just stopped. That was perfect timing. Jason Garrett. Okay. So here's what I'm going to just say about him as a football coach overall. Jason Garrett with out of this world talent for what? It had to be almost 10 years. And Tony Romo is arguably a Hall of Fame quarterback. If it were me, I would put Tony Romo in the Hall of Fame. You want to know why? because if you put Tony Romo in the Hall of Fame, then you have to put Eli Manning in the Hall of Fame too. But that's beside the point. if it means Eli Manning getting into the Hall of Fame, I don't mind if Tony Romo gets into the Hall of Fame. So, but that's beside the point.
I hope it's not out for of,
go ahead.
I hope it's not for announcing because he's just terrible.
Oh, you know what? I'm so glad you said that because one of my I do another podcast called Bleeding Blue. It's a Giants history podcast.
I listen to it sometimes.
Oh, thank you. It's my buddy Snacks, my co-host Snacks on that. He rips Tony Romo apart. He hates him. Everybody says that, you know, they love Tony Romo. He's getting paid like an NFL quarterback to be a broadcaster for CBS, by the way. That contract is insane. And everybody loves him, everybody worships him, and Snacks is like, I hate him, and I'm so glad you said that.
Hey, all I'm gonna say is when he said when Dak got hurt, oh, you just gotta hope it's a cramp. I was like, what did he just say?
Yeah, Jim. You literally saw like his foot poking out of like his sock and his shoe, and it's like, yeah, Jim, you just gotta hope that's cramp.
I just say I'm on the other side of this. I actually do enjoy Tony Romo's games. I do like him as an announcer, but I don't think Tony Romo's goal was to be the football announcer for CBS. I think he wants to move into the golf game eventually when Jim Nantz moves on, because you know he's a huge golfer. So I think that's really his end goal here over at CBS.
Sometimes when he calls the games, it feels like a golf game. I'll just say that.
Wow. Benny, you're dropping the bombs here. I love it. But Kate, I feel like his voice is too squeaky to be golf. You gotta
be cool,
calm, composed, and there's the putt. Like that's what you have to be. But Tony Romo, exactly. He gets too excited. He gets way too excited. I don't know. Well, maybe he'll drink a few brewskis before each telecast, and then that's how we'll get calmed down. Jason Garrett. So he. Every single year, and this is as a head coach, and I know being a head coach is different than offensive coordinator. And for the latter part of his Dallas coaching career, he was not the offensive coordinator, but it largely was his offensive system. Largely. Always underperformed every single year with out of this world talent. So then he comes to the Giants, and I talked myself into it. You know, I talked myself into the data from the first half of his Dallas coaching career, where he was the offensive coordinator and the play caller once he was head coach, very efficient. The average depth of target was low, meaning Tony Romo and quarterbacks didn't throw the ball very deep, at the time I was thinking Daniel Jones has a problem with turnovers. Daniel Jones has a slight accuracy problem with throwing the ball very deep. I think this is good. Making Daniel Jones an efficient quarterback, one where he's getting rid of the ball quickly, is a good thing. Now, that's exactly what happened with Daniel Jones in 2020. The average depth of target was very low. He was not throwing the ball very deep consistently, but the thing that was not happening was that he was not getting the ball out of his hands very quickly because the route concepts and also the talent. You have to include the talent in there, the route concepts and the talent at wide receiver and at the skill positions, they weren't creating separation. They weren't getting open. Daniel Jones, and this is with NFL Next Gen stats, Daniel Jones was releasing the ball and throwing into a tight window at an extremely high rate, and it was at an above average rate compared to the rest of the NFL quarterbacks. So here is also the main thing about 2020. Daniel Jones proved, differently from 2019, that he is a very deep, accurate deep ball passer. Very, very accurate. He was the most efficient deep ball passer. I'm not calling him the league's best deep ball passer because the attempts were so low. Let's put this in retrospect. Kenny Galladay in 2019 had four less catches from 20 plus yards than Daniel Jones had 20 plus yard attempt throws. Kenny Galladay is one receiver. Daniel Jones is a quarterback who's throwing to how many different receivers and tight ends? So the fact that that's how little of attempts Daniel Jones had from 20 plus yards, that one man in Kenny Galladay almost matched his production from 20 plus yards in 2019. So that's crazy. You know, the lack of production that Daniel Jones had from 20 plus yards and throwing the ball deep was so upsetting because of how efficient he was. And because when he did attempt those deep passes, guys were coming down with them and he was completing those balls and they were really changing drives. They were changing games. They were putting 7 points on the board, or they, it eventually led to 7 points being put on the board. So if we did that more consistently, and not even like throwing them and completing them, but if Jason Garrett just ran those deep concepts more, then that leads to underneath things. That leads to Caden Smith being open. It leads to Evan Engram being open underneath. It leads to Sterling Shepard being open underneath. It would have led to Golden Tate being open underneath. If you had Darius Slayton and, let's say, Evan Engram going for two deep concepts down the field, you're stretching the safeties. Wayne Gallman in 2020 faced an eight-plus man box, an eight-plus man box over 40% of the time. That was the most in the NFL. Now, I don't think NFL teams are going out of their way to stack the box against Wayne Gallman. No. NFL teams aren't doing that. If anything, they're going out of their way to stack the box against Saquon Barkley, which Saquon Barkley was gone for most of the season. 40% of Wayne Gallman's carries were with an eight-plus man box, and he still found a way to average like 4.5 yards per carry, 4.6 yards per carry. Why they were doing that is because no NFL defense respected the Giants' ability to throw the ball. And that is on Jason Garrett, in my opinion.
So you think that's on Jason Garrett rather than NFL teams just don't see Daniel Jones as that much of a threat? They'd rather stack the box, stop the run game, and then they just simply don't believe that Daniel Jones is going to beat them over the top.
Well, I would say at the start of 2020, I would say, you know what? Yes, Daniel Jones had some accuracy issues. But even though he had some accuracy issues, and that's what the advanced numbers said about Daniel Jones, the eye test in 2019, how many big explosive plays you can recall? A few on the top of your head. You can recall some in the Tampa Bay game. I can recall the Darius Slayton touchdown.
The
Green Bay game, the Washington game. Saquon Barkley was wide open on like a wheel route in the middle of the field. Sterling Shepard was wide open in the left corner of the end zone against Washington. There were a lot of big plays that Daniel Jones produced with his arm. And
I can think of at least one play in 2019, sorry to interrupt, where Daniel Jones had a big play, at least one in each game.
Yeah. So even though maybe I like to look at the advanced numbers. The advanced numbers say, you know, the accuracy had a little bit of accuracy problems, but also he was a rookie. He was a rookie. No rookie is going to ever rarely, you don't have a rookie that's rarely ever perfect, right? So Daniel Jones was far from perfect, especially when you count his interception and especially his fumbles. But he showed the potential to be one of the league's best deep ball passers. And they just refused to acknowledge that. They refused, besides the last few games of the season. Last few games of the season, in the Baltimore game, they started to run a little bit more deep concepts. Obviously, they got the snot kicked out of them that game, and Daniel Jones was still hurt. Most notably against Dallas, they really did week 17. Once Freddie Kitchens kind of got his footprint a little bit more in the offense, which ironically enough, Jason Garrett and Freddie Kitchens couldn't be more different. Freddie Kitchens, all he did in 2018 and 2019 with Baker Mayfield, just go deep, just throw the ball deep. That's what he did with Baker Mayfield in 2019. Now that doesn't work because you do need to have your underneath concepts. And Jason Garrett is very much throw to the intermediate, throw short. Like those two guys couldn't be more different. So I'm glad Freddie Kitchens was actually promoted, so maybe he can bring some balance to the offense. And that's the ultimate goal of 2021. We need a more balanced attack and a balanced offense.
Yeah, trust me, as a Steelers fan, I know all about not having a balanced approach on offense. Preaching to the choir on that one. Yeah.
But they love letting Big Ben throw. I'll tell you what, he's throwing all day. He's throwing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand. You'd think having a quarterback come off what is really a career-ending elbow injury that somehow was not, for someone his age, you wouldn't want the guy throwing the ball 50 times a game. But Randy Finkner's like, he's fine. His arm looks great. Look at him. He's zipping the ball all around. It's terrible. Terrible. I do have one question though. Looking at the pure stat numbers for Daniel Jones last year. In his rookie year, he had 24 pass touchdowns, and last year that dropped down to 11. Is that something you blame Jason Garrett for, or is that just something maybe Daniel Jones regressed a little bit? What do you think that comes down to?
Could I just say this before you say this? I want to just say Daniel Jones was injured for a lot of games. Like, was it what I think he was injured for four, maybe three games? I could be wrong. He should have not played against Arizona. He should have played against Baltimore, but he was injured and he was running a new offense. Go ahead.
So this is where I look at the EPA data, you know, EPA expected points added. I kind of talked about a little bit earlier, because what EPA does is, let's just say Daniel Jones let's just say he throws the ball to Kenny Galladay for 65 yards and the Giants get down at the 1 yard line, right? Saquon Barkley pounds the ball in for a 1 yard touchdown. Saquon Barkley is going to get credit for the touchdown. But what I like about EPA is that EPA, if the drive ends at a touchdown, it's going to give that play the credit for basically producing that touchdown. It's going to give Daniel Jones the credit in terms of the value it provides to the actual football game. So there was a point, and it was a stretch of a few weeks going from the first Philly game to the Cincinnati game, which was right after the bye, and that was, ironically enough, the game that Daniel Jones did get hurt, where Daniel Jones was producing at an above-average rate for EPA. The second Philadelphia game, Daniel Jones was like the second best quarterback in the league that week in terms of how he produced as a whole, both in the air and on the ground. And I love how Jason Garrett, Joe Judge, and company unlocked Daniel Jones's legs in 2020, because that provided a whole other element to the offense. Really, for a couple of weeks, it was the offense. Daniel Jones's legs was the offense for a couple of weeks. And imagine how deadly it can be with Daniel Jones's legs and then Saquon Barkley also, when you have those two guys running a read option. I mean, who are you going to account for? So that's going to be a lot of fun. But in terms of the passing touchdowns, you know, it's again, it's the lack of explosive plays. It's the fact that Wayne Gallman did have a decent amount of touchdowns within the 5 yard line. The Giants got to a point where if they were like inside the 5 yard line, if they were in the red zone, they didn't really throw the ball a ton, which I don't mind. If it ends in 7 points, it ends in 7 points. I don't care how it happens. But during the first stretch, during the first margin of the 75% of the season, that's, you know, where the Giants kind of were, where Daniel Jones kind of went awry is Wayne Gallman was punching the ball in. But I do also partially blame Jason Garrett for the lack of explosive plays, and that's why the touchdown total was so low. I don't pin it on all on Daniel Jones, all on Jason Garrett, or all on like Wayne Gallman. It's a combination of definitely all those three guys.
Mm-hmm. And to close this topic out, I think we're on agreement that we're rooting for Jason Garrett. Well, yes, Jason and I are, but
yeah, I mean, you don't have a choice. You need him to be successful.
Yeah, but the best part is, if he's successful, he's most likely gone. So everyone wins.
Well, then you want to know what? If he's gone, then if Joe Judge feels comfortable promoting Freddie Kitchens, then Freddie Kitchens is promoted. If Joe Judge wants to bring in somebody that actually is connected to him, he's going to bring in a guy where the communication will be, and I'm not saying the communication right now isn't on point and it isn't all the same, but Joe Judge is going to have the power to bring in one of his own guys. I'm willing to theorize that Jason Garrett and Mark Colombo, when they were brought along, they were not Joe Judge hires.
That was 100%.
It was a Mara. I would say it was a John Mara hire, because John Mara loved Jason Garrett. There was a rumor from Ian Rappaport that came from 2014. The Giants got shut out by the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2014, I think. Shut out. Bad game. It was like all-time low for Tom. And if Jason Garrett was not going to sign his extension with the Dallas Cowboys, Jason Garrett would have been the head coach of the Giants and Tom Coughlin would have been fired. Mm-hmm. But Tom Coughlin bought himself for another year because Jason Garrett was actually extended by the Dallas Cowboys. So John Mara is always like, and this is even another thing, if Joe Judge was not hired by the Giants, and if Jason Garrett didn't take so long to leave the building last offseason, Jason Garrett would be the head coach right now, or he would have been fired. Or he would have been fired because of how bad of a season the Giants had. So I think it's a saving grace that Jason Garrett is our offensive coordinator and not our head coach, and Joe Judge is our head coach. So, but if Garrett does leave, right, which he was already interviewed for the Chargers job this year when he had a god-awful season as an offensive coordinator. So if he has even an average season, he's going to leave. And I would not mind if Joe Judge got one of his guys in here, because every single other person on this coaching staff, including in the front office, they just hired somebody, O'Brien from Detroit, where that feels like a Judge hire. He used to be on the Patriots. So it feels like a Judge hire. Every single person on this coaching staff is a Joe Judge hire besides Jason Garrett. So I would not mind if he got somebody in here that he has a connection with and that he enjoys working with more.
Yeah, I really couldn't agree with you more. And where do the Giants in the draft, we can just touch on this quickly and then we'll get to NFC's predictions and then we'll get out of here. Where do the Giants in the draft do you think go? Because originally I thought it was wide receiver. They got their wide receiver. Then I thought, well, maybe they'll draft a tight end. Okay, they signed the tight end. So where do you think they go from here?
And they even signed a corner, too. Signed Adoree Jackson. So the Adoree Jackson signing really makes me think Micah Parsons or Rashawn Slater or I don't know what. I mean, I'll tell you what. If they don't get one of those two guys, I don't know. But then here's the thing. One of the wide receivers will definitely still be on the board, right? One of them. Ja'Marr Chase is not going to be there. Kyle Pitts is not going to be there. Jalen Waddle or Devonta Smith. It's just a matter of who do NFL teams value more? Do they value, are they going to go with Jalen Waddle, who I feel is a much better prospect, and I think he's a much more enticing prospect than Devonta Smith. But we could be looking back 10 years from now that Devonta Smith has a better NFL career because he's more durable. It's kind of crazy. I'm saying he's more durable when he's 170 pounds, but he's more durable and maybe he's just a little bit more consistent than Jalen Waddle. So here's my hierarchy right now. Slater, like the Giants, I think the Giants just, they need a guard. They need a tackle. And Slater is, he's rumored to play guard, that he can make the transition or tackle. Like, I would not mind if, Matt Parrott is our backup. And then Nate Solder is also another depth piece. And then there you go. That is our offensive line depth. You don't like Nate Solder. I hate Nate Solder too. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, I hate him. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was hoping and praying he would just retire. He's a nice guy. He really is. I think he almost won Walter Payton Man of the Year, if I'm not mistaken. So it's just, he's God awful.
Can I give a take?
Go ahead.
Pat Shurmur would have been the head coach of the Giants in 2020 if Nate Solder was an average left tackle.
You know what? I guess Scooty sucked because I love Joe Judge. So really, everything happens for a reason.
No, I really do, because Nate Solder was the worst. You're not wrong. He was the worst left tackle in 2019. Andrew Thomas had a better first half of the 2020 season. Like Andrew Thomas's first half of the 2020 season, which was putrid, which was terrible. It was still better than 16 games of Nate Solder in 2019. And, Benny, same thing with you. I feel bad saying it because he is a nice guy. He does deserve Walter Payton Man of the Year. The humanitarian work that he does, along with the work that, he has to put in for his son who has cancer, it's terrible. He doesn't have to do squat, but he still is an awesome person and he still does help a lot of people. So that's the personal side of things. Business side, football side, he is not a good player. He openly admitted after coming off of a career worst year, hey, I didn't really work out at all. I didn't really train myself throughout this 2020 season. So it's like, dude, so you're coming off of a year where you were the worst left tackle in football. You openly admitted to not training and you now want to come back. So the Giants put themselves in a bad position. He did not put the Giants in a bad position. Giants put themselves in a bad position with this contract. And it honestly worked the way that it worked out. It couldn't have worked out any more perfectly. Because let's say if the Giants do draft Slater and they view him as a right tackle, Matt Parrott is your backup right tackle and left tackle. And Nate Solder is there just as solely like a depth piece. Solely.
It teach them how to do. He was good before coming to the Giants, so he could teach them stuff. I guess
I guess that that's the positive. And his $3 million that he signed this year, it's guaranteed. So there's not a chance that I mean, there is a chance that they can cut him if the Giants just want to eat that $3 million in dead cap, but it's more likely than not that he's here. So right now I'm going Slater. I'm going, I guess I would go wide receiver because it's, you know, I value that more than I value an interior linebacker, especially somebody who's an interior linebacker too. Wide receiver, preferably Jaylen Waddle, and then Micah Parsons. Those are my three. But outside of that, you know, let's just say Slater's gone, because if Dallas, you know, Sewell's going to be gone. Sewell's going to be gone before Dallas is on the board. At least I think so.
Oh, Dallas is ahead of us. I forgot.
Yeah, Dallas is one pick ahead of us.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of Dallas fans, they want corner. But looking at what they've done in just their history, now Mike McCarthy's at the helm, but looking at what they've done in their history, even when offensive line isn't necessarily a question, they take an offensive lineman, you know? And that's how they've built their very good teams in the past. So I think they would take Slater and not even blink once, because offensive line is a very big need for them. Very, very big need. I think even more than corner.
But not even that. You look at the money they just gave Dak, and after his injury last season, you'd have to think they'd be looking to protect him even more now than ever. Yeah. So, yeah, I would agree with that. The Giants are in a really good position this draft because they don't have any glaring holes on the roster that they need to fill. So, like, if this guy, X guy goes that they want to get, is drafted ahead of 11, it's not a big loss for them. I'm looking at the mock draft right now. They have Micah Parsons going to you guys right now. Yeah. I mean, they have him ranked as the sixth best prospect in the draft today. So, I mean, you get the sixth best prospect with the 11th pick. That's not a bad move.
No, and you know, we are hoping that four quarterbacks go off the board in the top 10. I'm very much hoping for that. I think
that definitely happened too.
Well, you're at least hoping to get two out. You're at least going to get two with the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Jets.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, Jets are rolling with Darnold, apparently.
Really?
Oh, that's been it's a talking point. Dave Gettleman also says a bunch of things and then does the opposite.
Yeah.
But the big talking point, and Corey Davis said it during his introductory press conference. I signed the contract, you know, thinking and knowing that Sam Darnold is going to be the quarterback. Yeah, I'm sure you did, but it wasn't the guaranteed money. but they are putting out that vibe that Sam Darnold is their quarterback next year. They're putting out the vibe. It's not like they're saying, it's not like I'm saying that they are saying it, but they're putting out the vibe and they're saying it with words. So that would be really interesting to see what they're going to do. But four quarterbacks, that's what we're hoping for.
Yeah. I mean, he has the potential to be great, Sam Darnold. He has the tools. And it's just that Jet thing.
Yeah. Oh, man. Adam Gase was horrendous too. But
Adam Gase.
Yeah, I think the Giants should look at offensive linemen. You can never have too many in this league, especially with a young quarterback. But you might be in a position where it's just a take the best player available kind of thing. You know, if someone falls out of that top 10 that should not have fallen out of there, then you'd be in a perfect position to scoop them up.
Yeah.
So really, I don't think there's any wrong way to go here. I mean, receiver, offensive lineman, linebacker, I think any of those would be just fine.
I hope they don't take edge rusher because they're really, I don't think, you know, a lot of people, Rousseau. I don't think there's an edge rusher that's really worthy of a high pick, a high top 15 pick. You know, if you're a team that's you know, picking past the 20s and, you know, you have a lot of you have a lot of positions that are already filled on your team anyway, and you want to take a flyer on Rousseau, I mean, sure. But for 11, taking Rousseau there, I can't even think of another. You know, I know there's an edge rusher to Georgia everybody likes that he's really fast, but he's also one-dimensional, and Giants aren't really about taking one-dimensional guys. There's not really an edge rusher in this draft that I'm going – Google Gaga over. But if there's one need that the Giants have, it's edge rusher, and it's in the interior part of the offensive line. Those are really the only two needs that are glaring holes on the roster. And even with that, you know, the Giants could view Lorenzo Carter and O'Shane Zimenez as free agents that are, you know, we're getting back these players from injury. And I put that in quotes, and I put free agents in quotes because they miss so much time with injury that they're just getting them back on a clean slate. And they also could view Shane Lemieux and Will Hernandez as two answers at guard. So even though they have the holes, they have people there that they can convince themselves, if they do want to go with them, that they can rock and roll with them.
Yeah, this is a very weak draft for edge rushers. I definitely wouldn't take a flyer on one out of 11.
No.
I'm a big Zaven Collins fan, but he's not technically classified as an edge rusher, even though he can. But even he's not projected. Right now they have him at 28th going to the Saints. So, I mean, that you guys are way too high up to even take someone like that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so, yeah, guard, receiver, linebacker for me.
Yeah, and I think the Giants have given up on Will Hernandez. I think he got benched. Didn't he get – after he came back from COVID, he got benched, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think there's writing on the wall that something other than on-the-field performance happened with him.
Okay.
He did get COVID, yes.
He did. Could have went to like a party or something. We're just speculating. We don't know that.
I'm not saying like that he got COVID and then no, I'm saying like him as a football player or like him as a teammate. And I don't know this. I'm speculating, you know, and I'm just trying to infer something had to happen that was like in the locker room, off the field, like they're questioning his work ethic. They're questioning him as a football player, whatever. Something had to happen because it's not like he was too good of a football player to be benched. It's that Shane Lemieux was just bad. He was bad as a pass blocker. He was okay. He was decent as a run blocker. It was a liability as a pass blocker. So Will Hernandez was not, he's not a great guard. He's a good guard. You know, I think he can start for the majority of NFL teams. And, you know, we were expecting taking Will Hernandez in the second round, we were expecting him to be a great guard, but I don't know if it's going to be the worst thing in the world if he's a good guard, but clearly we'll see what the Giants, how they approach him this year and how they approach this situation, whether he's traded or he's released. I don't think he's going to be released, but if he's traded, Giants can't go into 2021 with Will Hernandez not starting.
Mm-hmm.
They can't.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more there. He was such a team guy. I remember like the Dallas game, and then we'll get to the Giant preview, what we think is going to happen with them this season. Didn't he get into a fight with the Dallas player on Monday Night Football, or is that somebody else?
Yeah, no, that was him. I would love to see him and Nick Gates just mash people together. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's a huge fall. But anyway, transitioning to the last part of the podcast, I do a little rapid fire, but first we're going to – I'm just going to ask you, where are the Giants finishing? I'm thinking first place. I'm thinking we can beat the Cowboys. We should beat Philly. Of course, you never know what happens. Of course, last year I asked you on one of your live streams, hey, are the Giants ever going to win in Philly? And you said, no, probably not. No. So you never know with that. But Washington, to me, we're in their head. I think we could beat Washington, especially because we don't know who their quarterback is. Where do you think? What do you think?
I'm picking Giants first. I have to this year. I have to. If this is a let's rock and roll, let's I'm not going to say go for it, meaning the Super Bowl, but let's go for the NFCs. Like let's continue to build the foundation of this franchise. You know, the rebuild's done. I mean, that's the main thing that this offseason signaled. The rebuild is done. You know, a lot of people were talking about the sins of 2018. You know, even continuing to not really rapidly improve in 2019, this offseason did signal that the rebuild is done, that the Giants should be a football team, that number one, you don't want to play, which I already think that is a narrative around the National Football League. You don't want to play the Giants. You may not, you know, they may not beat you, but you don't want to play us. But you don't want to play the Giants, and the Giants should be making some noise in the NFC East. I would love them to win the NFC East this year. I think they have a more talented roster, maybe outside of quarterback, than Dallas and Washington. I would say Washington and the Giants roster are pretty even, but it's a matter of, can Daniel Jones be better than Ryan Fitzpatrick? Ryan Fitzpatrick is the quarterback for Washington in 2021. Unless it's, go ahead.
He should be better than Ryan Fitzpatrick. If he's not, to me, means some bad things happened.
Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, can Taylor Heinicke really realistically win the job? I would love Taylor Heinicke to win the job and then beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick. I would love that. It would really make me feel good as a Giants fan. Yep. But that's what we're looking at. You know, can the Giants roster over exceed the expectations of, you know, Dak Prescott and how far he can carry the team. And, you know, Mike McCarthy is an excuse for a head coach in the NFL, which I love. Rebranded himself as an analytics guy, but failed to exceed any kind of those expectations of actually being an analytically advanced head coach in 2020. Love it. Glad to have you back, Mike McCarthy. Wish they kept Mike Nolan. So there's that. Washington, you know, it's a matter of can Daniel Jones be a better quarterback than whatever they're going to roll out there? And that's going to be the big question there. So, and I think Daniel Jones can. I think he can. If we integrate more deep concepts and if the playbook is opened up a little bit more, Saquon Barkley being back, Saquon Barkley should not be the main focal point of this offense, in my opinion, because I think throwing the ball, the quarterback should be the main focal point of this offense. But if Saquon Barkley can be that complementary piece to Galladay, really, like Saquon Barkley would be that second option in this offense, including in the passing game. That is such a valuable weapon to have, to not overly rely on your running back, but to have him there as someone you can just go to when he can be open, and, you know, go to, you know, in the running game. That can be such a valuable and deadly piece there. So Giants fans should expect to win the NFC East in 2021.
First time in years we're allowed to say that.
Yes. Then,
go ahead.
Yeah. The NFC East, as you guys know, is such a weird division. You know, you haven't had a repeat champion since 2004. I think it was the Eagles won a couple in a row. It's such a weird. So that would tell you that the Redskins are not going to win the NFC East this year. So you could remove them from the equation. But I think we all agree that the Eagles should obviously be the fourth team in this division. The Washington football team is such an interesting team because the defense is phenomenal. But the quarterback situation is so iffy. I mean, I would expect that Ryan Fitzpatrick is the quarterback this year. I just don't see how Heinicke can beat him out. But you never know. He played really well in that playoff game last year. Fitzpatrick, you never know what you're going to get out of him. Is he going to be Fitzmagic? Is he going to win you 10 games? I mean, I argued that the Dolphins last season would have made the playoffs had they stuck with Ryan Fitzpatrick over Tua. So Fitzpatrick can make them a playoff team. So Washington going to be completely reliant on what happens at quarterback, whether or not they can win this division. The Cowboys, if Dak comes back healthy and he looks like he did before the injury, they're a really interesting team to watch because they're a true boom and bust team. They could be 11 and whatever it is, 11 and 5, just as easily as they could be 6 and 10 next year. That's how I view them. They had a lot of injuries last year. That offensive line was banged up. It's still not good. So if they can make some improvements there, they'll definitely give this division a run. But right now, looking at it, I think the Giants are the favorite. Probably not by too much, but they are the favorite, at least in my opinion. I think you have overall, the team as a whole, I think is the most solid team in the division. But this is such a weird division. I think there should be at least two teams with a winning record this year, but you never know. Next thing you know, everyone's 7-8 or whatever the case may be. I think the Giants are the favorite right now.
I just read off your Twitter page that he should be ready to go off week one. The Talking Giants Twitter page. He should be ready to go week one. Just wanted to point that out for the tight end.
I love it. I want to. You know what? You know what's wild right now? I'm seeing. Well, this is from January 2nd. I'm trying to find odds, like odds on NFC East winners for next year. And I don't know when the last time this was updated. So they should just have live odds. Like you would think that would be a thing. But last time I checked, this was 3 weeks ago, 1 month ago. All right, so to be determined. I wanted to check the live odds. But as of like 1 month ago, the Giants had the same odds of winning the NFC East as the Philadelphia Eagles did, which still I think that's disrespectful.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy right there. I mean, unless Jalen Hurts has some phenomenal season. Here, I have the odds right here.
Tom Brady, really. That's how I would see it, unless he's Tom Brady.
As of right now, the Dallas Cowboys are actually the favorite to win the division, according to FanDuel.
Are those odds updated?
Yeah, they're live as of now.
Read them off for me.
The Dallas is +105 to win the division, so they're not outright favorites. But Washington is second, they're +280. The Giants are third at +460, and the Eagles are last at +500.
So it's closer to, you know, Giants are closer to being last than they are to being second place. All right.
Yeah, Jackie.
All right.
That's very sad. I'm sorry. That's just sad.
I've never said this before, but I'm going to say it now. All right, bet.
Oh, man. All right. One rapid fire question. I have an Eli Manning signed Super Bowl hat in my room from the last time they won, because my grandparents' neighbor used to live right next door to Tom Coughlin's personal secretary. So, fun fact about me. And I also have Tom Coughlin's signature. But what is your most prized Giants memory? I think it's on the wall from what I can see. Do you have anything you'd like to share with the group?
Memory or memorabilia?
Memorabilia / memory, because mine's the Super Bowl runs.
Okay. Well, my most prized Giants memory is being at the Week 17, 2017, 38-35 loss to the New England Patriots. But that loss led to a Super Bowl victory because, you know, and also I witnessed history, the first undefeated 16-0 team, and the Giants just played awesome. It was the best football game that I've seen from start to finish. But memorabilia, let's see. I mean, I have a, you know, the Eli jersey that's right here. And I even have, I'm a big NASCAR fan. So there's a Dale, I don't know if you guys are using video, but there's a Dale Jr. helmet that's behind me. My most prized memorabilia piece, though, it's actually in, it's, I record in my room, and my studio is my room. So I have a Land of the Giants framed picture above my bed. On the left-hand side, it's Lawrence Taylor. In the middle, there's O.C. Umanure. And on the right side, it's Michael Strahan. And they're all signed by the three of them. And that was like one of the first pieces of memorabilia that I bought, like, myself with my own money. And why it's so valuable to me is because it actually survived a house fire. So I had a house fire when I was like in middle school, and you look at it and it's all like wrinkled, and we were worried that if we ever got it, if we ever tried to get it like repaired or, you know, renewed, restored, that if we took the pictures off the glass, it would like rip like right on the glass. So we haven't touched it, and it survived a fire. And it's like all wet, but it's like one of my favorite pieces of memorabilia because I bought it and it survived that moment. So Lawrence Taylor, O.C. Umanure, Michael Strahan. O.C. Umanure was like my favorite player growing up. So that's my favorite piece of memorabilia.
I couldn't agree with you more. Mine for me is just, it was my grandfather's hat. Now it's my hat. And Eli actually wore it. There's like a sweat stain. That just proves to you that Eli Manning's just a class guy. He just gave the hat up without even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been an edition of the Mets News Podcast. I'd like to thank Justin for coming on. This is, you've passed Bobby Skinner as my favorite interview to do so far. I had a lot of fun. You guys are both great, though. Go subscribe to them. Do you have any, I know you have the Twitter, at Talkin' Giants. I know you have a Patreon. You started a YouTube channel. Am I missing anything you can add on?
What I really want to plug, because this is my baby, before I joined Talking Giants, I did a podcast called Bleeding Blue. And then since then, I rebranded it to be a Giants history show. So if you like the Giants and, you know, I had enough of the Giants today, I want to relive the glory days, well, then come over to Bleeding Blue. It's where we have a podcast itself. It's a Giants history podcast. And then also, we premiere every Monday at 6 p.m. on the Talking Giants YouTube. We premiere an episode. I hang out. Snacks is in the chat. Bobby's in the chat. We all talk with everybody as we watch the show, and I edit the crap out of the videos. So it's a lot of fun. And it's a play. It's all in a playlist too. You can look at, there's like 10 episodes. We've done it for 10 weeks now. 10 weeks worth of episodes where you can go back and you can rewatch. So Giants history, Bleeding Blue on the Talking Giants YouTube channel. It's its own podcast too. So thank you very much for having me on, guys. This was a blast.
All right. And thank you so much. This is, again, an honor for me to have both of you guys on, where I get all my Giants news where I started. I love it. Thank you for coming on. Thank you, Cade, for coming on from Blackjack Sports. And that's it, guys. Stay safe. and have a good one. Thank you very much. Let me just stop recording.